And if not, don't stress. I know that once she sees this, all will be forgotten anyway. Evie gave me a grateful smile and waved. I'd made it all the way to the door before I couldn't stop myself from turning back. You would look super hot in that lingerie, though. Just saying. A pair of satin panties whizzed past my face, hitting the doorframe. When I looked back at Evie, she was casting a scowl in my direction. Once at home, I felt the stirrings of a headache forming. Huffing out a deep breath, I sat down on the side of my bed. I just needed a fucking minute here. I raked a hand through my hair, feeling the weight of all this new pressure on my shoulders. Reaching into the drawer of my nightstand, I pulled a worn slip of paper from inside a familiar envelope. The paper's edges were soft, and the faded ink reflected its age. As much as it evoked memories of my less than desirable beginnings, it was almost comforting in a way, too. I was left at 4 years old with just the clothes on my back, a size too small and fraying at the edges, along with this note in the parking lot of an emergency room downtown. My fingers traced the barely legible scrawl absently. I remembered nothing of my life before, and my adoptive mom said that was a good thing, but I wasn't so sure. Even some sad memories would have helped me piece together the fragments of my early childhood. The blank space was left to fester, growing wider, deeper with each passing year. It was an emptiness inside me that nothing in my life had been able to fill. And believe me, I'd tried. Booze, women, fast cars, I'd tried it all. Now I'd resigned myself to live with that hole in my chest. I kept my head down, throwing myself into my work to compensate for the missing puzzle piece inside me. But what else could I do? I stuffed the paper back inside its resting place, knowing I was about to get deeper into my own issues before I found my way back out again.
Chapter 16. Evie. I was a walking cliché. The once ugly duckling, who had shed her baby fat and awkward phase, was still too chicken shit to believe she was pretty. I let out a heavy sigh, checking my appearance one more time. I might not like what I saw in my reflection, but that was silly, right? Smith saw me that way. He saw me as a sexual woman who'd wanted to explore, someone smart and capable and funny. He even said I'd look beautiful in that lacy peach lingerie. We worked in the business of seductive undergarments, but I'd never let myself believe I would be wearing them for a man, let alone Smith, of all people. Fuck it. Turning on my heel, I grabbed my purse and strutted for my apartment. I wouldn't know unless I tried.
Chapter 17. Smith. Meet me at Restaurant Saint-Germain. At 7 on Friday. I glanced at my text to Evie once more just to confirm the time and then checked my watch. 5 after. She was always punctual, if not early, and I was starting to think I was about to get the blow-off. The week at work had gone by at a snail's pace. Once I'd smoothed over the whole cock-up with Arabella, largely helped by the fact that Evie had indeed hit the ad campaign out of the park, there had been only mundane number crunching to focus on. That left way too much brain space for me to think about Evie. The kiss in the copy room, and most of all, our date tonight. I settled into my seat at a corner booth of the famed restaurant and glanced at the door again. If there was even going to be a date. She'd said yes when I texted her the other day, but maybe the weirdness of witnessing Cullen's response to our exchange had finally gotten to her and she'd chickened out. I wouldn't blame her one bit. It was fucking weird for me, too. But things had escalated to the point that I was past caring. We would deal with Colin when the time came. For now, I knew that I was on the cusp of something with Evie. Something special. Something I'd never felt before. Something that was equal parts intriguing and maddening. Something that had the potential to quiet the demons inside me that whispered in the dark of night that I was unlovable and bound to be alone for life. It might even be, "Hey, you." I looked up to see Evie standing next to the table wearing a cream-colored blouse and a black leather skirt that fit like a second skin. Her hair was up in an elaborate twist that made me want to yank out the pins just to see those curls go tumbling around her shoulders. My heart stuttered in my chest, and I stood. "You look amazing," I murmured softly, leaning in to kiss her cheek. I breathed in her scent while I was at it, and my cock stood at immediate attention. "Thank you," she replied, her smile a little shy. "The skirt is a little much for me, kind of racy, but I figured, what the hell?" What the hell indeed. I resisted the urge to skim my fingers across the buttery soft leather and cup a handful of ass, and instead gestured for her to sit. "I wish you'd let me pick you up next time," I said, sitting back down across from her. "After the close calls we've had with Cullen lately," she said with a snort. "Our luck, he'd be pulling in for a surprise visit right as we walked out. Uber is fine. If you want to take me home tonight, though." She trailed off, her eyes blazing, and my pulse raced to warp speed. "Ma'am, may I offer you a beverage?" The waiter, who had magically appeared, asked in the thickest, most put-on French accent I'd ever heard. Evie blinked up at him, her brow furrowed. "I'm sorry, what did you say?" He smiled, but there was an edge of annoyance as he replied, "I said, what may I get you to drink?" His accent was no less obnoxious, but this time she understood him because he added a pantomime of a person drinking from a glass, his pinky extended. Sure, I'll have... She shot me a glance and I shrugged, motioning to my scotch. I'd been spared this fake accent routine because I'd ordered mine at the bar before sitting, so she was on her own. "A glass of Chardonnay, please." He bent in half in a deep bow, nearly beaning his head on the corner of the table, and Evie winced. "I will return in momentarily with your libation," he said, before turning on his heel and sauntering away. Evie stared after him and then turned to me. "Holy crap," she murmured, and burst out laughing. I'd always loved that laugh. It rocked her whole body and rang through the room. Apparently, though, not everyone was as impressed. A pair of diners a few seats away sent disapproving glances our way. I kept the grin on my face and raised my glass to them before taking a deep swallow. Fuck them. If Evie's contagious laugh didn't charm the pants off them, they were clearly raised by wolves. When she finally stopped giggling, Evie held a hand to her heaving chest and shook her head. "I've been to some nice places in my life, but this one takes the cake. There are 5 forks, Smith. 5. Even I don't know what to do with that many," she whispered, jabbing a finger toward the gleaming utensils. "I'm feeling a little out of my element." I was about to argue with her, to tell her she would fit in no matter where she went. But the truth was, when I'd planned the date, I just wanted to impress her. This place was a Michelin 3-star restaurant and made all the magazines. After our first date at my apartment, where we'd eaten a humble roasted chicken, I'd wanted to knock her socks off. But that wasn't Evie, was it? This was a generic fancy date for a generic woman. Evie was right. The only reason she was out of her element was because this place wasn't good enough for her. I dug into my pocket, pulled out my wallet, and dropped a 50 on the table. Then I stood and held out my hand. "Come on, let's get the fuck out of here." She let out a puzzled laugh and eyed me suspiciously. "And go where?" "You'll see," I replied, a plan already unfolding in my mind. Tonight would be a night Evie would never forget, and it wouldn't be because of any stars or fancy food. It would be because the date was for us and only us. "I thought this place closed down last year," she said, shooting me a shocked look as we pulled up to Rapscallion's Bar and Grill less than an hour later. "Nope, granted, nobody we know comes here anymore because it's still a college bar, but they're open, and it's Friday 5-cent wing night, and they have a trivia contest going on." When her eyes went suspiciously glassy, I knew I'd done good. This was the same bar we'd gone to on her 21st birthday. Up until the point that she'd lost her cookies, she'd had a great night. We all did. Sometimes I wondered if I'd known then that things had changed between us and had refused to admit it to myself. Thank you for bringing me here. Lots of great memories, she said, reaching out a hand and laying it gently on my chest. She shifted on the seat of my car and then gasped, Oh my God, but look what I'm wearing. I think I'm just a little overdressed, no? Except that one time you were naked in my hotel room bed, you always seem overdressed to me, so I'm not the guy to ask, I said with a wink, but I can help if you're worried about it. I shrugged off my suit jacket and tossed my tie aside before facing her again. Let's get this hair down first. I reached for the twist like I'd been dying to do since she first walked into the restaurant, and with a few gentle tugs sent the whole mass tumbling down in a cascade of honey waves. I ran my fingers through it until it looked sexy and must, like she'd just left my bed. Perfect, I murmured, my voice gritty. Her throat worked as she swallowed and nodded. Good start. What else? I trailed my hands down her neck to the buttons of her blouse, flipping open one and then another until a sexy hint of cleavage showed. It took a Herculean effort not to bury my face between her breasts and stay there until morning. I worked up one more surge of self-discipline and untucked the hem of her blouse, unfastening two buttons at the bottom as well and knotting it at her waist. It was only then that, in the moonlight, I realized I'd uncovered a swathe of fabric. Peach lace. Oh, fuck, I groaned. My gaze locked with hers, and her breathing became choppy as she wet her lips. You said you wanted to see me in it, she whispered, her voice so low I had to lean in to hear her. I sure had. In her office a few days before, I'd pointed to this very piece of lingerie, and now here she was wearing it. For me. My resolve not to sleep with her was hanging by a fucking thread, and that thread was unraveling faster by the second. I want to see the rest of it more than you could possibly know. In fact, my dick was so hard it could have crushed coal into diamonds. But if I unfasten one more button, we're never getting out of this car. Would that be so bad? She asked. She gnawed on that bottom lip the way she always did, and I let my thumb caress just a scant inch of the soft fabric before pulling back. Yep, because if you think your real first time is going to be in a car, you've lost your mind. And if I didn't get out of said car, I was going to lose mine. I pressed a hard, rough kiss to her mouth because I couldn't not do it, and then I flung open my door. Now let's go have some fun. Luckily, we did. We strutted into Rapscallions hand in hand like we owned the place. We got a few looks from the jeans and t-shirt crowd, but soon enough everyone went back to their beers and Evie and I were engaged in a heated battle at the dartboard. All I need is a bullseye and I win, she said, rubbing her hands together with glee as she lined up the tip of her high-heeled shoe with the piece of black tape that marked the floor. She closed one eye and perched the tip of her tongue on her top lip as she focused. As competitive a person as I was, I felt a rush of pride wash over me as she launched that dart into the heart of the board. The electronic game beeped and blinked wildly in celebration of her victory, and she danced along with the noise and time. Oh yeah, I'm a beast, she chanted, shimmying in place as I looked on, shaking my head in mock disappointment. In truth, I could have watched her shimmy all night. A swathe of that peach lace flashed at her waist whenever she moved, and it was doing things to my insides that I couldn't even describe. I strolled toward her and bowed deeply like the waiter at the restaurant. Congratulations, mademoiselle. May I buy you a victory drink? She grinned and nodded. Yes, please. No sex on the beach, though. Shot and a beer for me. We made our way back to the bar, and I placed our drink order. While we waited, she sent me a grin that lit up the room. This was a great idea. I'm having a blast. Remember the night of my birthday when we first got here, we did that trivia contest? And Colin made our team name Multiple Scorgasms? I laughed out loud at the memory. That was awesome. And to be fair, we did crush it that night. We did. I think that was the last time I got to hang out with Pam. How is she doing? Thinking of my sister made me realize I hadn't shared the news yet. Actually, she's pregnant again. Evie stared at me before clapping a hand over her mouth. For real? Holy shit, she's amazing. I don't know how she does it all. When I have kids, I think I'm going to need to... Never mind. She stopped short and blushed before taking a swallow of the beer the bartender had set in front of her. You're allowed to talk about the future and the things you want in life, Evie, I said gently. Maybe our whole talk about being casual had made her afraid to talk to me about anything serious. That was a mistake. While I wanted to take things slow, it had become glaringly obvious in the past weeks that this was as serious as things had ever gotten for me. I didn't want you to think because I want kids one day that meant I expected them to be yours or whatever, she said, finally meeting my gaze. The vulnerability in her eyes made me ache for her, and I leaned in and pressed my forehead against hers. I know that, and I'm not sure how this is all going to turn out, but I can tell you this. Thinking of you with someone else's babies makes me want to break shit, and if that's not casual, then too fucking bad. Her grin was tremulous, and she traced a fingertip over my mouth. Yeah, too fucking bad. This was deep, deeper than we'd gone so far, and part of me wanted to pull back. Opening up about shit like this had always been a bone of contention between my ex and me. Talking about kids and the future had been terrifying. What if I was like my own father and found out that once I had a kid, I didn't want to be a parent anymore? What if I was shitty at it, like my mother, and opted out when things got hard? Time and time again, Karen had pressed, and time again, it had felt like an invasion of privacy. Eventually, it became a no-fly zone, and we'd drifted apart with nothing real to sustain us. But with Evie, even as I was about to change the subject and make a joke out of sheer habit, something stopped me. This didn't feel like an invasion at all. It felt right, like getting something off my chest that had been sitting there like a weight for a very long time. I cupped the back of her head and touched my lips gently to hers in the softest of kisses. For a long time we stayed like that, breathing in sync, just holding each other, and damn if it didn't feel good. I was falling, and I was falling hard. I could only hope Evie felt the same and that, soon enough, we'd come up with a way to tell her brother. A way that wouldn't drive us all apart and ruin everything.
Chapter 18 Evie It was late and way past my bedtime, but I had no desire to end this and go home. Smith and I had moved to a little booth beside the bar, and I was trying to keep it together, despite the fact that his jealousy had my heart singing. Why would a man care who a woman had a baby with if he was just in it for the sex? And more to the point, why the hell weren't we having sex if he was just in it for the sex? These were the questions that plagued me as we sat talking and nursing our next round of drinks. I quickly realized that thoughts like those were a descent into madness. I would literally drive myself crazy if I kept trying to analyze every word he spoke. Instead, I focused on the man in front of me. I loved everything about tonight. The reservation he'd made at that swanky restaurant, and then promptly broken before stealing me away for a much more laid-back evening, which somehow had made the date even more intimate. Sharing laughs, telling stories, we'd been able to open up and be ourselves. As I gazed into Smith's eyes, I realized that something about him being older made him so much more desirable and charming than other men. A beer-swilling, hamburger-eating, football- and video-game junkie, he was not. Or maybe it was just that guys my age were so juvenile compared to Smith. He had friends and family who loved him, an impressive job that he dressed in a suit for every day, and that was before he came in to help rescue Sophia's. Everything about him was special and attractive to me. Just the life he'd built for himself was enviable. Most days I felt like a hot mess, munching on dry cereal from a plastic bag on my way into work, reading those sex tips articles at night, hoping for inspiration. Yeah, I was a work in progress. But Smith knew exactly who he was. A businessman, an athlete who enjoyed regular 5-mile runs to the park on the weekends, a friend who could be relied on. Or at least he did until I marched into his hotel room that night and confused everything. So, how do you like working for the company? Did you ever imagine you'd be working in women's undergarments? I asked. He let out a short chuckle. No, never. I always enjoyed lingerie, but usually it's because I'm the one taking it off. Now I was the one letting out a giggle. I do really like working there, but I'm just a numbers guy, he continued. You and your brother are the true visionaries. Just a numbers guy? I rolled my eyes at him. I'm pretty sure you're a millionaire, so yeah. Shit, I shouldn't have said that. The drinks we'd downed were going to my head. But Smith just shrugged. My family is. I got lucky. You won the lottery with them. Smith's family was amazing, but I hoped I hadn't just put my foot in my mouth. We got quiet for a second, but I'd already started down this path, so it only made sense to keep going. Do you ever wonder about your biological parents? If you have any siblings out there? Smith sat up straighter.
Of course I do.
Have you ever looked into it? Hired a private investigator? Anything like that? He shook his head.
I've thought about it, but no. Couldn't do that to my mom.
Mary, the woman who fostered, then adopted Smith, was now simply Mom. It was sweet that he was so thoughtful, putting her feelings first. But this was his life, too. Surely he was entitled to some basic information about where he came from.
Do you want to know the truth?
He asked, and I nodded.
It gets to me sometimes, not knowing. Living life is one big question mark. Even the little things, like when I go to get a physical and the doctor wants my family's medical history, or wondering how I got my hazel eyes.
It was crazy how much I could know about this man, and yet he constantly still surprised me. Reaching over, I placed my hand on his. I never thought about that part of it, being in a family with people who don't look like you.
Yeah, maybe someday, maybe when my parents pass away, I'll look into it. But, you know, regardless, I don't think I'd change a thing,
he said with a shrug.
Even after all the hard times early on, it was tough getting shuffled around, especially because I was so young and didn't understand. I wanted to be loved so badly, and couldn't figure out why no one wanted to love me back.
His tone was so matter-of-fact, like that of a man far removed from that pain. But my throat ached with tears at the thought of a 4-year-old Smith being packed up and moved from house to house. I wanted to go back in time, find his birth mother and father, and slap them both upside the head for leaving him. Sure, maybe they'd done it because they couldn't provide a good life for him anymore. But in my emotional state at that moment, none of that mattered. All that mattered was that Smith had suffered, and I hated the thought of it.
My parents are really wonderful, he continued, oblivious to my internal struggle, and my relationship with Pam and her family is probably one of the best things in my life. I wouldn't trade that for the world.
I nodded in agreement. Cullen and I were close like that, and it was a bond that could never be broken. At least, I hope not. I took a sip from my glass and tried not to let myself indulge in that line of thinking. If Cullen did find out about Smith and me, and that was enough to damage our relationship for good, then there were deeper problems at play. We were family, and we would work through it if it came down to that. It was Cullen and Smith's relationship that had me worried. As close as they were, it was still hard for Cullen to accept that I was a grown-up now. He would probably think Smith had taken advantage of me, which, considering how we'd started whatever this was between us, was almost funny.
But I do think my past fucked me up some, and probably has a lot to do with my relationships as an adult. I won't lie, Everly,
he said, meeting my gaze.
I feel different about you than I've ever felt before, but I don't know what that means yet. I'm no white knight, and I could fuck this all up. If you want to walk away now and cut your losses, I'll understand.
God, had it only been a couple of weeks ago that I'd climbed into his bed? So much had changed so quickly. How strange, my only goal back then was to get a do-over, to have my first orgasm with a man and have Smith be the guy at the other end of the dick I needed to get me there. How quickly that had changed. Yeah, I still wanted that. More, every day, actually.
But now, as we sat talking about our hopes and dreams and families, I found myself wishing that this was my life. Smith and me talking about our day, laughing at darts and sharing our lives with each other. That was dangerous shit, and I needed to watch my step. But I wasn't walking away. Not yet. "And miss all the fun? Not a chance," I replied, trying to keep my tone light so he couldn't see how much this meant to me. He claimed to be no white knight, but the Smith I knew would back off instantly if he realized the power he had over me. If and when this ended, I would be destroyed. Only I couldn't let him know that. In an effort to take a step back from the intimacy and catch my breath, I shot him a grin before plucking a $5 bill from my purse. "Why don't we go play some music on the jukebox?" I stood and waited for Smith to join me, and then headed over to the glowing monstrosity in the corner. Once it ate my money, we paged through, looking for songs we both liked. "Oh my God, do you remember this one?" I jabbed my finger on "Remix to Ignition" by R. Kelly and closed my eyes for a second as the music started.
"How could I forget? You were like 10 years old, and I walked in on you singing it into a brush that time. It was hilarious," Smith said, his eyes shining with laughter.
"By hilarious, you mean awesome, right? Because I'm pretty sure I was singing the shit out of this song." I leaned in and belted out a few lines along with R. Kelly as Smith howled with laughter. Yeah, this felt good. Too good to stop. Major crash and burn ahead or not, I was committed to staying on this ride with Smith and finding out when and where it ended. If I wound up with a broken heart, at least I had Maggie to comfort me, along with Ben and Jerry. It would have to be enough.
Chapter 19. Smith. 3 weeks later. "And we just got a huge order from Saks." Colin leaned forward, putting his arms on the table between us, and shook his head in amazement. "Saks? Smith, do you have any idea how long I've been waiting for an order from fucking Saks?" I raised my eyebrows in approval as I bit into my massive roast beef sandwich, all the while trying not to follow Evie's movements with my gaze. "Not to mention that the new line is on fire at every single retailer," Colin continued, spooning up some of the chowder from his bowl and shooting me a wide grin. We'd been at lunch for precisely 4 minutes before Evie had walked into the same little deli a few blocks from the office. She hadn't caught sight of us yet, but there was no doubt she would. I only hoped she'd have a little mercy on me and refuse our eventual invitation to join us. She was wearing a new tailored pantsuit, and it hugged her bottom like a glove. It was hard enough trying to keep it together in the office day after day with her brother in the general area. When we were all forced to be in a room together, it was a living hell. From a sheer numbers perspective, we're outpacing even our most optimistic forecasts, so this is awesome, I said, digging into my potato salad as Evie passed our table. In a stroke of perfect luck, she caught my eye right as Cullen's attention was focused on sprinkling oyster crackers into his soup. She must have been as uncomfortable with the thought of making it through a meal as part of this awkward threesome as I was, because she wiggled her fingers at me and tore ass out the door. "I couldn't be happier," Colin said, beaming. "Thanks so much for coming on to help out. Between you and Evie, it's been a game changer." Me and Evie. I chewed my food as I thought back on the past few days. Had it really only been 3 weeks ago that we'd gone out to rapscallions and played darts? It seemed like months. In the interim, we'd seen each other daily at work and then again most evenings. Even if it was just the two of us meeting at a dive across town for a quick cocktail after her yoga class, or me surprising her by stopping at her place on the way to Pam's to steal a kiss. Twice, she'd come over for movie night. Twice, we'd missed half the movie, making out like teenagers on my couch. And twice, she'd squirmed against my hand as she came for me. My cock bucked in my pants as I recalled the heat of her, the scent of her, that tight fucking... "Seriously, my little sis is on fire," Colin said with a proud smile. I nearly choked on my roast beef, forcing it down my dry throat with a long chug of water. What? I said, my pulse jackhammering as I tried to clear the rest of the sandwich from my aching windpipe. Cullen's brows drew together and he let out a laugh. The social media stuff she's been putting together. The boutiques are all fighting over her now. They each want their own Evie campaign and are using her images as jump-off points for their window displays. My heart rate slowed to something closer to normal, and I forced a tight smile. Yeah, she's doing really well. So well, in fact, that I had to credit a large part of the revenue hike to her efforts. I'd told Cullen that earlier in the week, but my own guilt made me wary of repeating it. Was I too complimentary? Was I too friendly toward her? Not friendly enough? All in all, this was getting real fucking old. Something had to give, and soon. Besides the fact that I was in near constant state of arousal, I also had to wrestle with my conscience. I felt like a fraud. Here I was at lunch with Evie's brother, unable to stop thinking about my fingers working inside her and that little break in her voice when she came. Not cool. Not cool at all. I managed to get through the rest of lunch without choking, but the whole thing had left a bad taste in my mouth. By the time we headed back to the office, I was feeling like shit on every level. For being a bad friend, for having to basically ignore Evie at the deli, and for not singing her praises as loudly as I should have been as far as work went, because I didn't want Cullen giving me the side eye. I made a mental vow to take the coming weekend and make some major decisions about Evie and about my life. Somehow, I'd managed to keep my vow not to go all the way, but there was no shot that was going to last. I was a hair trigger away from losing control every time we were together, and soon, this flesh and blood would fail me. Before that happened, I had to have some idea of where things were going from here. On a whim, I told Cullen to go on ahead of me. I'm going to stop off and grab a coffee. See you up there. He was already distracted by a text he'd gotten and threw up a quick wave before disappearing through the double doors. I veered off toward the little cafe next door and ordered one of those mocha lattes Evie liked and a chocolate-covered biscotti. It was totally irrational how excited I felt as I stepped off the elevator to our offices a few minutes later and made a beeline toward Evie's desk. She was on the phone, but she waved at me, a smile playing on her lips. Yes, Linda, I totally understand, and I agree. The purple would look great with the green. So for the next round of images, that's what we'll do. I set the coffee on Evie's desk and tugged the biscotti out of the bag. Her whole face lit up, and her fingers brushed mine as she took it from me. You're my hero, she mouthed, her eyes going soft with something I couldn't quite name. I went to my desk feeling like exactly that, a fucking superhero, to be exact. What was it about this woman that she could make me feel that way with something as simple as a smile? I thought back to a time when we were younger that I'd seen that same smile. A bunch of us had gone swimming at the lake one hot summer day. I'd been with a girl, Annalise Benson. She'd developed early, and I was ashamed now to say that was all I'd seen in her because she was also catty and a total snob. That day at the lake, we'd been dating for about a month, and I still hadn't been able to see past her tits. Evie had been around 12 and had finally started to grow out of her tattletale stage, so we'd let her come with us. She was paddling around in the water while Cullen chatted with some friends on the beach. Annalise and I were making out in the shallows when I heard Evie cry out. I pulled away so fast I nearly knocked Annalise on her ass to get over to Evie. She'd apparently cut her heel on a sharp rock and was bleeding badly enough to require stitches. As I carried her to shore, I overheard Annalise muttering under her breath, I don't know why we had to bring that clumsy brat with us anyway. I could feel Evie stiffen in my arms at the cruel words, and as I looked into her tear-filled eyes, an icy rage had flowed through me. We didn't have to bring her. We wanted to, I'd snapped. And she might be clumsy, but at least she's not a stuck-up bitch. Annalise had taken off in a huff, taking my chances of getting laid along with her, but I didn't give a shit, because Evie had looked up at me with that smile. Why had it taken so long for me to see what I saw in her now? And how the fuck was I going to explain all this to her brother in a way that didn't tear us all apart?
Chapter 20 Evie. Who would ever compare? That's what I found myself thinking as I sneaked a peek at Smith out of the corner of my eye. He was focused on the road, his profile superhero clean, his strong, capable hands on the wheel, a small smile playing about his firm mouth. If it was just his looks, maybe I could have dealt. Looks weren't everything, after all. But it wasn't just that. The past weeks had been magical. He made me laugh. He made me come. He made me feel important and grown up. And best of all, he made me feel heard. When I spoke, he didn't sit there texting on his phone like a lot of the guys my age did. He looked at me, and he really listened, his phone nowhere in sight. I shifted in the passenger seat and held back a sigh. This was exactly why I'd made the whole casual edict so adamantly in the first place. Not for Smith. Smith was all about casual. In fact, I was pretty sure he'd never done anything but casual, aside from one long-term girlfriend, and even after they'd broken up, he certainly hadn't shed any tears. No, the casual label was for me. I'd hoped that the more I said it, the more I could remind myself that this was all temporary, every last bit of it. The sweet dates, and even sweeter kisses, having Smith's undivided attention, feeling his hands and mouth on me. And when it was over, things were going to have to go back to the way they were. I was a smart cookie. Surely, just like memorizing state capitals, if I repeated it often enough, it would stick. But apparently the line between my brain and my heart was out of order, because while my rational mind accepted the inevitable outcome, my heart was on a whole other level, filled with hope and anticipation and excitement. It was making plans and promises and daydreaming about babies. Stupid fucking heart. My throat ached and my eyes burned with preemptive grief. Funny, I'd always been the careful one, and the one time I took a risk, there was no question about it. This one was going to leave a mark, a long-lasting, indelible scar on my heart. Exactly, dummy, and there's no changing it now. What's done is done, so you might as well enjoy it while you've got it. Resolved to do exactly that, I shoved aside my melancholy and glanced out the window, watching trees flash by. Where are we going, anyway? I asked, straightening in my seat and shooting Smith a questioning glance. Our past dates, I'd typically met him somewhere away from our usual hangouts, so we wouldn't get spotted together. But tonight, Smith had insisted on picking me up. Now, though, I realized we were headed north toward somewhere outside the city. There was nothing this way but houses and churches.
We'll be there in about 60 seconds, and then you'll see, he said, his half-smile ramping up to full power.
That smile was like being kissed by the sun, warming me through to my core, and I realized I didn't give a crap where our date was, as long as I was with Smith. He pulled down a cul-de-sac and into the driveway of a modest but cozy-looking house I'd never seen before.
I probably should have warned you to wear an old shirt, but I'll buy you a new one if this turns out the way I think it will.
It was only then that I realized that he was dressed super casual himself, a hoodie and a pair of worn jeans, as opposed to my new sweater and high-heeled boots combo. Now my curiosity amped up to code red, and I gaped at him. What the heck is going on, Smith? Are we meeting some friends of yours for a double date or something? And if so, wouldn't that news get back to my brother? But I kept that last part to myself because I realized with a start that I wanted to meet Smith's friends. I wanted to know everything about him, become part of his life story for real, instead of just a note in the margins. The melancholy threatened to return like a gray cloud, but I pushed it away again. Whatever tomorrow brought, tonight I was with a guy I wanted, I liked, and I trusted. So tonight, I was going to take happiness by the balls and squeeze out every last drop.
I don't think I'd call it a double date exactly, but...
He trailed off as the front door swung open, and Smith's older sister Pam came charging out in a wrinkled dress, running a brush through her hair as she went.
I'd never been one to run in heels, but Pam was wild-eyed and sprinting like the devil himself was on her heels. Her husband, Tim, who I'd only seen in pictures, followed behind, grinning broadly. Smith motioned for me to step out of the car. I did, and he followed suit. "You guys, I can't even tell you how much this means to me right now, like..." Pam broke off, her eyes filling with tears as she clutched my forearms. "I thank you. My husband thanks you. My sanity thanks you." She dragged me in for a hug and then pulled away. "I'd love to stay and chat, but I've got to go before Winnie notices I left." She shot a fearful glance over her shoulder and then dashed toward the passenger side of the minivan in the driveway, blowing Smith a kiss from afar. "Love you, bro. You're the best, and you have my number, but don't, like, use it unless someone is literally on fire." Tim chuckled and ran a hand through his red hair, making it stand up on end as he gave Smith a hearty slap on the shoulder. "Finn has decided that sleep is for quitters. Mac just projectile shat on the dress Pam had started out wearing, and Winnie flushed Pam's bracelet down the toilet. We need a break so bad, my man. We are forever in your debt." "Tim! Christ, please freaking hurry before they see us," Pam hissed before turning her gaze toward Smith and me. "And you too, hustle on inside. They've been alone for 47 seconds. They could have already booby-trapped the place by now, so enter at your own risk." The minivan doors slammed shut, and the vehicle's tires actually squealed as they back out. Smith turned my way, and his grin faltered a little as he took in my shell-shocked expression.
"Okay, so I know this looks bad, but I swear, they're exaggerating a little. If you're miserable, I won't be mad if you call an Uber to take you home. And you can pick the next date, all right?"
I nod on my lower lip, blinking hard to keep the tears burning the back of my lids from falling. How could I possibly explain how I was feeling without scaring the hell out of him? I'm not crying because I want to leave. I'm crying because I've never wanted to be anywhere more than I want to be here with you, right now. Instead, I mustered a smile and settled for, "Are you kidding me? Kids are a blast. We're going to have a great time. Let's do this." Then I let my mouth pull up into the smile I'd been trying to keep in. Smith looked so relieved, the vice grip on my heart loosened a little, and I chuckled. "Although, between you and your sister, I gotta tell you, I'm half expecting these kids to be swinging from the chandeliers. So let's head inside," I added. He rounded the car and popped open the trunk, tugging out a bag before closing it.
"Don't be scared. They're not so bad. They're what we like to call spirited."
He closed the distance between us and took my hand.
"Come on, let's get inside so I can introduce you to the wrecking crew."
The next few minutes went by in a frantic blur. Copper-haired Winnie introduced herself to me and then promptly brandished a foam sword and demanded that I get my sword or die a miserable death, while Finn slugged me in the crotch with a Nerf gun. While I was defending myself from that onslaught, Smith had dropped his bag in order to chase baby Mac, who, in the short time that we'd been outside with Pam and Tim, had decided that the diaper life wasn't for him anymore. He was tearing around the living room buck naked, his plump little baby buns jiggling for all the world to see. And damn if he didn't make dimpled butt cheeks look cute. It was a look I wished I could pull off. And through it all, I hadn't stopped grinning. I couldn't have wished for a better date, because casual be damned, Smith had let me in. The love he felt for his niece and nephews was so plain to see. It was etched into his every feature. I'd met his sister Pam a few times when I was younger, just because our brothers had spent so much time together. But this was different. Smith had brought me here to spend time with the people in his life who mattered most to him. It might not mean anything, Evie. He could have just forgotten that he'd promised to babysit and you got folded into the mix. But damn it, it felt like it meant something. It felt like it meant everything. "Do you want to have a tea party with me?" Winnie asked, dropping her sword and eyeing me speculatively. I nodded and squatted to meet her at eye level. "Of course. Who wouldn't want to have a tea party?" She jerked her chin toward baby Mac, who was still diaperless and was currently attempting to ride the dog.
Mackie hates tea parties. All he wants to do is poop and eat Cheerios.
She rolled her eyes and gave me a conspiratorial grin.
Babies.
I'm going to order pizza,
Smith said, finally getting a handle on a squirming Mac and tucking him under his arm like a football.
What do you want on yours?
M&Ms, Finn piped up. And pineapple.
Smith made a gagging noise and ruffled Finn's hair.
I'm going to have to veto the candy on there, because it's both sacrilege and disgusting. Plus, your mother would kill me. But the pineapple is a go.
Finn nodded, his face solemn.
I accept that compromise so long as we can have some of the M&Ms from that bag you brought when it's movie time.
Smith barked out a laugh.
How do you know there are M&Ms in there?
He always brings M&Ms,
Winnie whispered, cupping her hand to my ear in order to protect her secret. I couldn't help but smile, equally in awe of the man as the kiddos were. Seeing him in action like that, watching him navigate this situation with humor and ease, was fascinating. As the night progressed, Smith and I had zero time alone together, but it was right up there with one of the best nights of my life. The kids had boundless energy, and the life and laughter in this little house was everything a family should be. I soaked it in like a sponge, committing it all to memory. Every uninhibited childish guffaw, every baby squeal of delight, every mess, and every hug. By the time 10 p.m. rolled around, the pizza boxes were empty, the kids were sprawled out across Smith and me on the couch, and I was on cloud nine, glowing from the inside out, exhausted, but happier than I could ever remember being. Thank you, I murmured softly, running my index finger through Mac's feathery blonde hair and shooting Smith a watery smile. Thank you so much for inviting me. They're amazing. He nodded and reached out to tug a strand of hair behind my ear.
So are you. They're nuts about you.
I wish you could be nuts about me, too, I wanted to whisper, but I held it in and tucked it away deep in my heart. Life could be a grind sometimes, but tonight had been a rare gem, an oasis of perfection. No way was I going to ruin it. He leaned in, past baby Mac and over little Winnie, and pressed a soft, gentle kiss to my mouth. As his tongue swept across mine, I said a little prayer.
Come on, Smith. Just give me one chance, and maybe a little hope that we can make this real.
Chapter 21, Smith. I love those kids. I could still hear the warmth in Evie's voice as she watched Pam's little monsters running around like lunatics as they played indoor tag. After the night we'd had, most women would have left, shell-shocked and ready to have their tubes tied. A few might have stuck it out with a grin and bear it attitude, but I was pretty sure almost none of them would have joined in and wound up covered in s'mores under a pile of exhausted little bodies at the end of the night. Evie hadn't put up with it or done it to humor me. Her cheeks had glowed with pleasure, and her lips had been tilted up in a perma-smile. By the time I dropped her off at the end of the night, she'd been sporting a pair of crooked braids courtesy of little Winnie, and an electric purple manicure that covered almost as much of her fingers as it did her nails, but I'll be damned if she'd ever looked more beautiful to me. My brain instantly supplied an image of her in that peach lace teddy, and I found myself grinning. Okay, so maybe it was a tie. The thing that was becoming clearer by the day was exactly how much I enjoyed Evie's company. Whether she was writhing against me, begging me to make her come, or belly laughing beside me as we watched a movie, she'd managed to work herself into the very fabric of my life. And I liked it. I waited for the feeling that always followed that realization, the fight-or-flight response that made me do something stupid to fuck things up, or cut bait and walk away. But cool, never-get-attached Smith was dead silent. Maybe he was dead altogether, because all I felt was hope and excitement for the future. Anticipation of more nights like the one we'd spent with Pam's kids. Maybe with our own kids someday? I gulped down a mouthful of now tepid coffee, then set the empty mug in the sink. As crazy as it would have seemed a month ago, now the thought of having some rugrats of my own, rugrats with Evie Reed, didn't seem crazy at all. Which meant it was long past time to make an honest man of myself and talk to Cullen. Whatever the outcome, it had to be better than Evie and me sneaking around like a pair of star-crossed teenagers. Cullen was a grown man. He'd be pissed at first, but he'd come around. And then I could finally make this right. I could finally have Evie like I'd dreamed about. I thumbed through my contacts and tapped Cullen's number, my muscles tense as I waited for him to pick up. "What's up, man?" He was slightly out of breath, and I glanced at my watch. 8 a.m. "You already running?" I asked, striving to keep my tone light. "Nope, just did shoulders at the gym and am about to hit the pavement. Want to join?" he asked. Seemed like the running trail was as good a place as any to get into this shit. And hey, at least we'd be close to the lake in the event he straight up murdered me and needed an easy place to hide the body. After all the lies I'd told him, the least I could do was make it convenient for him. "Yep, I'm in," I said. "Meet you by the flagpole in 15. I was chill as ice cream as I changed into my gym pants and laced up my kicks, but by the time I reached our designated meeting place, my heart was hammering a drumbeat against my ribs. The cadence felt oddly like the lyrics to a song with only one word. Traitor, traitor, traitor. "What's up, asshole?" Cullen jogged up behind me and punched my shoulder lightly. I managed to grin in spite of the dark cloud hanging over me. "Hey, prick." "Glad you called," he said. "We haven't hung out in a while." Guilt weighed down my stomach, and suddenly the last thing I felt like doing was running, but I sure as shit couldn't back out now. "Yeah, been busy," I muttered, following his lead and doing a few perfunctory stretches. "That's okay. Today's my 5-mile day, so we've got plenty of time to catch up," he replied with an evil grin. "Ready, chump?" Shit. I'd been banking on the whole run plus a cool-down taking 30 minutes, tops. I had it all planned out in my head. 10 minutes of bullshit, another 10 spent on work stuff, and then, just when he was starting to get short of breath, I'd test the waters on the whole Evie thing. Short and sweet. Best of all, if things didn't go the way I hoped, we wouldn't be stuck running next to each other, stewing and pissed off. He could go his way, I could go mine, and he'd have the rest of the weekend to cool off. 5 miles from soup to nuts was going to take at least 45 minutes, maybe even closer to an hour. We hadn't even started yet, and already that length of time felt interminable. Lies will do that to you, you jackass. "Yep, let's rock and roll," I said with a grim nod. We took off at an easy jog, letting our muscles warm up and getting into the groove. Cullen chattered about a blind date he'd gone on that went horribly wrong, and I found myself having to slow my pace because I was laughing so hard. "A lot of people have pictures of themselves in their apartments, Cull. I have a couple of me and you hiking, and that fishing trip..." "No, see, that's what I mean," he said, shooting me an incredulous look over his shoulder as he jogged. "These weren't group shots. It was literally just dozens of pictures of herself with her cats on every available surface. They were everywhere. In some, she was looking over her shoulder, like old-style glamour shots, and in others, she was leaning her chin on her hand, looking off into the distance. So when I mentioned that she sure had a lot of pictures of herself, you know what she said?" I shook my head, waiting for the punchline. "She said, 'If I don't love myself, how is anyone else going to love me?'" I chuckled and sprinted toward him to catch up again. "Isn't that like a Dr. Phil quote or some shit?" "It is. In fact, I'm pretty sure 90% of the things she said to me were Dr. Phil quotes. It was bizarre. But to top it all off, when I left, she said, 'I don't usually do this on the first date, but I really like you.' And she kissed my forehead like she was my great aunt or some shit. I'm telling you, bro, she was whacked." "So when are you going to see her again?" I quipped. He threw his head back and laughed. "Actually, I gave her your number. Hope that's cool." As we wound our way around the lake, I couldn't help but feel that twinge of nostalgia creeping in. Cullen really was like a brother to me, and I miss this. But since I'd started spending time with Evie, my own guilt over the situation made it almost painful to be around him. It was definitely time to tear off this fucking band-aid. Sounds like that's one for the books, I said lightly. Speaking of dating, anything going on with your sister in that department? Been a long time since she's had a boyfriend. Last one I recall was in high school, and even that was barely a thing. Cullen shot me a puzzled look and shrugged. No clue. I don't ask her about that shit, mainly because I'm afraid she'll actually tell me. You don't get it because Pam is older, I guess, but it's weird thinking about your little sister. He trailed off and let out a disgusted growl. You know what I mean. I hear you, I muttered, resisting the urge to change the subject and abort this clusterfuck of a mission altogether. Suck it up, asshole. There were only two options here, tell him or end it with Evie. Somehow, in the past few weeks, option number two was no